You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. Leon and Liz here today.
You bet. Here we are. Holiday special, Liam.
Yeah. Thanksgiving week. What are you up to? Are you traveling?
Yeah.
You driving? We want to know. We have a lot of information. I'm Leon Dolan. I live here in Los Angeles. I live in Pasadena, actually. I'm a writer and producer. And today on the show, I'm going to introduce you to one of my former neighbors.
Oh,
who
yes.
is an Emmy Award-winning music composer.
Oh, well, that's good. So that's his qualification
for
being a guest.
Yeah, I saw him walking the dog and I said, oh my gosh, we need a guest. Can you come in?
Julie's not here. Can you come on in, Marty?
Yeah. So in the last segment, we're going to be talking to Martin Davich, who,
yes.
you know, composed the music for ER.
Some of, wow. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, Emmy award-winning composer. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
I'm Liz Dolan. I'm the middle sister. Today, I guess I'm the top sister.
Top sister.
Because Julie's not here.
Yep.
I'm top for today. I live in Santa Monica, California. I am a marketer, a podcaster, a dog lover. That's enough for today.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So today on the show, we're also talking about your fantasy place to spend your holiday, either a Thanksgiving, a Hanukkah, a Christmas, a mm-hmm. New Year's Eve. We asked the question in our Facebook group. Liz, we got some inspirational answers. Don't you
think? So many.
Yes.
Like, really, there were about a dozen that I thought, oh, I have to do that one year.
Right.
And so, like, I hope I live long enough to do all of the great ideas that are posted in the Satellite Sisters Facebook group.
All right. We also have the top 10 places where people actually do spend the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
This is from data collected by the Casa. They're like a house rental agency.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So they actually, Liz, they did some research on where people have gone over the last 3 years.
Research?
Yeah.
You
imagine.
Mean they're not just saying whatever they think? Wow.
No.
That's very professional, Leah.
So that's what we're covering. So we hope that you are cooking or cleaning your house or setting the table or driving to the relatives and listening
yes.
to the show. And it's a lot of fun for you.
Over the river and through the woods.
Exactly.
Well, first, I want to note that, Leon, you are, for those Dolans who live here in Southern California, you are usually the host of the Thanksgiving gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this year, you even had a total out, you know,
right.
that because, you know, you've had surgery, you've had colon cancer. That is that was going to be a legit reason not to host Thanksgiving. But
right.
but you want us there. We want to be with you. So,
right.
so that is very nice. But, you know, in years past, my assignment for Thanksgiving, I'm not insulted by this, but I am always given tasks that require no cooking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like on the cheap end, that would be like, could you bring the ice?
Right.
Which I'm good at. But on the expensive end, you know, my usual is like I go to the world's most gorgeous seafood store, is Santa Monica Seafood, and I just get dozens of shrimp.
It's good.
Because everyone in our family loves that as a first course for Thanksgiving. Yes, we get into all the usual stuff later on, you know, your turkeys, your sides, but like shrimp as a first course is kind of thing. But I guess I always felt a little bit sheepish about it because it's sort of a no cook thing and maybe not that Thanksgiving-y. However, I was walking through the store just last week and there's a sign up that said, put in your orders now for Shrimpsgiving. So I just want to say I feel so much better. So much better that it's a real concept now. Instead of being the backup item for the sister who can't cook but will pay any amount of money, it's now a thing, Shrimpsgiving. So I will be covering Shrimpsgiving this week, and I'm so inspired now that it's the real concept. I think I'm going to add your crab claws, a few other things.
So now it'll be
Shrimpsgiving. It goes beyond shrimp, of course. Shrimp is just the centerpiece,
right?
Of like the turkey would be the centerpiece of Thanksgiving. So yeah. Shrimpsgiving is my new favorite holiday, and I feel like I practically invented it. So you can look forward to that at your home on Thursday.
Shrimpsgiving.
Who thought
that's
that up?
That's exciting.
It's just genius.
Yeah, it's great.
Maybe it's because I'm a marketer.
Yeah.
When I see something super simple like that, I was like, oh, somebody just had like a good day at work. They're like, you know what? We do peddle a lot of shrimp over the holidays, but we need to give it a concept. We need to, how can we package this better? Shrimp's giving. Genius.
Well, Liz, one of the things I've always said about Thanksgiving is I love doing the cooking.
Mm.
So the cooking for me is the fun part. The hard part about hosting multiple people for Thanksgiving is the cleaning, the prep work, and then
yes.
the post-op.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. Like the bathrooms, the floors, the silver. Mm-hmm. Like if you're doing a big old-fashioned Thanksgiving, the work is there. The cooking is actually the fun,
yeah.
the fun part.
And you're
for
good
me.
At the cooking.
So this year, I've warned you, like it's going to be very low-key. I'm not bringing up, I have a lot of turkey paraphernalia. I have pilgrims. I have
don't do it.
Candlesticks. I have silver.
If there was ever a year, Leanne.
We're not doing it. You're going to get some
the
burlap
this year.
Some burlap and some white dishes,
uh-huh.
but I thought it would just be fun to all be together. It's a relatively small crew.
Okay.
And I have my son, Colin, as a sous chef.
Oh.
Now, it may surprise you. He's not, he is, I think he is typical of his generation in that he doesn't actually cook that much, but he watches a lot of cooking shows. So it's given
okay.
him.
So he's seen enough YouTube
yes.
videos to have confidence.
Yes, yes. And so he is an interest level. He just doesn't necessarily have experience like or knife skills or anything like that. But
okay.
So I said to Colin, listen, we want to do this. I want to try to cook, but can you be my sous chef? Because it's even hard. I'm still recovering from surgery. It's even hard for me to stand for long hours of time.
Right.
Like, I can't be on my feet 12 hours a day cooking. And he said, no, I'll be your sous chef.
And sous chef. Okay,
and
good
then,
for him.
And then good news. I got a text last week like, okay, I've watched all the Bon Appetit Thanksgiving videos on YouTube. I think I'm ready.
Okay.
And then he committed to cranberry sauce. He feels mm-hmm. he feels like he could try a cranberry sauce.
Sure. That's a good entry level.
It is.
Uh-huh.
It's really not complicated, but that's good. I want him to actually master that.
Yeah.
I know he's been making a lot of risotto, so we may actually have sort of switch it up, maybe
nice.
Have a risotto. That's
uh-huh.
But there are other things he's ready to do. So it's exciting that I'm really going to have some help in the kitchen this
okay,
time,
I'm
which
happy
I appreciate.
For you. Now, because you're still getting over colon surgery,
yes.
are there items that you can't have this Thanksgiving that in your like food elimination diet that like will not be on the menu?
You know, the traditional Thanksgiving foods actually line up pretty like pretty well. I
mashed
can
potatoes.
Have mashed potatoes, like a lot of refined carbohydrates. I'm in. Mashed potatoes, butternut squash,
uh-huh.
a little bit of turkey is okay.
Uh-huh.
It's when food gets a little out there, like the Brussels sprout category, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know,
too fibrous.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Any of those cruciferous vegetables, that's mm-hmm. a bridge too far for me right
mm-hmm.
now. You know, I make the four onion gratin, the creamed
you
onions.
Do.
I feel like
so what's the status?
I feel like
onions?
I will make it, but that's probably not something I'll eat this year.
Oh.
Uh-huh. We introduced salad to the Dolan family Thanksgiving with much controversy about 15 years ago.
Yes.
Our
mother was still alive, she was outraged
that
a green salad
yeah.
was appearing on a Thanksgiving table.
And it's increased in popularity.
As if she was like a pilgrim
yeah.
or something. And
I know.
Had to go buy the book.
So, yeah. So I can't eat the salad this year.
Okay. No more salad.
Yeah. So some of the big questions. So the shrimp, I can eat shrimp.
Oh, good.
What I have to watch is volume. Like, okay. I'm just supposed to be eating small portions of everything,
uh-huh.
you know, six small meals a day as
yes.
opposed to one giant Thanksgiving dinner.
Uh-huh. So as you said last week, because it's like a mouse moving through a snake.
Yes.
So you just need to make sure that it's a very small rodent moving
right.
through your snake.
Right.
Not some larger size.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
uh-huh.
I just have to pick carefully. I have to choose what I'm going to eat pretty carefully and just to not overindulge. Also, I haven't been drinking alcohol, so
mm-hmm.
So that makes me sad. But
that's sad.
So,
how about wait? If I add oysters to the shrimpsgiving, no, you can't. No raw. No.
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 First,
okay.
Again, probably not on any list, but just terrifying to me. So, like, cooked food is going to be better for me than not
cooked
food.
Okay. All right. Okay. Good.
So that's it. But
because there are no actual rules about shrimpsgiving,
no.
I can pretty much create my own rules. So good. There are no oysters this year for Shrimpsgiving.
But I'm excited to have people and excited to do the cooking. I'm excited to be in the kitchen with Colin. I'm looking forward to it. So I think it'll be, well, anything that starts with shrimp and ends with pie,
yeah,
that's a good meal, right? That's a good meal. I ordered the pies, by the way.
Oh, okay.
We don't bake.
Well, because I did have news about pies.
Okay.
About traveling with pies. First, I do want to explain that, like, when we grew up, so there are 8 kids in our family. Our mother had 3 sisters. They also had lots of kids. And Thanksgiving was always at our house. So because we had cousins in Massachusetts and cousins in New York, and we were in Connecticut, so we were in the middle. So everyone came to our house. So we do, in our family, have this expectation that it's a giant extravaganza. So it's hard for us to scale back.
It is hard.
I'm proud of you, Leah.
Thank
you. If you're not bringing up the pilgrims from the basement, if you're just going with, like, okay, good for you. So, but people do, in our family, usually make an effort to show up places for Thanksgiving. Not that we all have to be together. There's like an Oregon group that will be together. There's an East Coast group. So when I saw this article in, what was this? This was in the LA Times this weekend. Well, I especially thought of our mother, but like so many families travel for Thanksgiving. Our mother was famous for flying with food.
Yes.
You know, it's as if she believed that when she was living in Oregon and coming to visit us in Southern California, that like onions for your creamed onions could not be had for any price in Southern California.
Yes.
So she would travel with onions in her carry-on.
Yeah.
Or
packages of soup.
Yes.
Soup mix.
Yes.
I mean, honestly.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Uh-huh. There was the famous time where she was busted at TSA for foil-wrapped chocolate turkeys because, of course, we had to have foil-wrapped chocolate turkeys, like, on the table. People know that about us now. But when you put that in your carry-on bag and it gets x-rayed, you know, it looks like hand grenades.
Yes.
And so you can't, I'm happy that the TSA even noticed that she had a dozen of these small round metal things in her bag.
Yeah.
So we always pay a lot of attention to the rules about what you can fly with and what you can't. So
yeah, a lot of pate. She used to transport a lot of pate. Again, hard to believe.
Mm-hmm. So, but here's a, so the TSA guidelines, generally, what is cleared for takeoff in your carry-on? Well, because, of course, if you want to check it, you can check it. But who's going to check a pumpkin pie,
right?
Yeah, it's not. Some things you're either carrying or they're not coming. So, you know, they say turkey, dry stuffing, casseroles and desserts such as pies. You can carry on all those things, in theory. What's not is more than 3.5 ounces of any liquid, which we know. So, like, how much gravy do you need? If your family only needs 3.5 ounces of gravy, then yeah, you can bring it. But, well, that's pretty lame, right? So you either need to check your gravy or make your gravy where you're going. But here's the, if you're trying to remember, thinking about like what are the rules, the general rule from the TSA says that if you can, quote, spill it, spread it, spray it, pump it, or pour it, and it's more than 3.5 ounces, it's got to be packed in your bag. No carrying on. So just remember that. You can just chant that to yourself. Sprill it, spread it, pay it, pump it, or pour it.
Okay. I don't know what some of those words were.
Yeah. So, okay, turkey. You can carry a turkey on. Now, they say cooking it ahead of time is the easier option, although you can take it uncooked if you follow the TSA's instructions about packing it in ice or frozen ice packs. I would just say from a food safety point of view, traveling with an uncooked turkey, I'm not for that. I'm not, like, again, but whatever. Those are the rules.
Well, it takes like 3 or 4 days to actually unfreeze a turkey. Mm-hmm. Actually takes a while. So but seems heavy. Seems very heavy.
Yeah.
Big frozen turkey.
But remember, well, when Julie lived in Thailand, but would come and we would be working together here in the United States, she would, on more than one occasion, she went to the honey-baked ham store in L.A. and bought 2 honey-baked hams to bring home to Bangkok because, surprise, surprise, she could not get a good honey-baked ham in Bangkok, Thailand.
Yeah.
So she would travel with 2 hams.
Yeah. No, it
so,
can be you know, done.
It's
can
all,
be done.
What are you up for? What are you up for? Anyway, so turkey, yes, you can carry on a turkey. Stuffing, yes, you can carry on stuffing. Depending on its level of moistness, though, because if it's too moist, then it sort of gets into a semi-liquid as far as the TSA is concerned.
See, that's a real food safety issue for me. Like, yeah. The turkey's defrosting, but actual cooked stuffing, that seems nuts to carry on.
Okay. I'm just telling you what the rules are. Okay. Next is cranberry sauce. Obviously, your son will not be traveling with cranberry sauce. He's going to make that at home. Your beloved cranberry sauce can be transported in your carry-on. Again, 3.5 ounces. I'm just asking you, what kind of group are you eating with that 3.5 ounces of cranberry sauce is going to be enough? That is not enough. So don't bother. But the best news is TSA wants everyone to know pumpkin pie, total green light.
Really?
You can pack it as a carry-on or in checked luggage. Again, as I previously mentioned, don't check a pie. That seems like, no, that's not worth it. But they do note in this article, if you're traveling with a pumpkin pie, in case your flight is delayed, keep a 4 candy. Because it's a good kind of
good one.
Emergency snackage
good
on
joke.
your way to grandmother's house. Yes. So
good
there
joke.
You go. That will be there'll be a link to that in the show notes if you would like to review the TSA regulations about traveling with
That's
food.
News you can use. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about your favorite places to spend the holidays, some great spots all over the world. But first, we would like to thank a couple of our sponsors here at Satellite Sisters.
Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. Mm-hmm. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. PROS isn't just better for you, it's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. So, PROS, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos, too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then post it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, PROS. PROS is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And PROS is spelled PROSE, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, PROS.
All right, we're back. Okay, now we posed a really fun question at the Satellite Sisters Facebook group. And if you're not a member of our Facebook group, come on in and join. It is a private group, so you do have to ask to join and then answer a couple of simple questions. And then in general, it's for listeners of the podcast. So if you regularly listen to the podcast, it's not an issue. And we asked, what was the best place that you've ever spent a holiday that was not your home? It's not that your home isn't great. I know people are going to say, I love spending the holidays at home, which is great.
We all do.
We were looking for a sort of an exotic location or a wintry location or an unexpected location. And if you hadn't done that, if you hadn't really managed to get away, what was your fantasy location? Mm-hmm. And I was just so happy to see the wide range of answers. Liz, do you remember where your favorite vacations were, Thanksgiving?
There was one Thanksgiving where I just went with a friend to Santa Fe, and that popped up a lot on the list in our Facebook group. Santa Fe is such a beautiful place. It's gorgeous at Thanksgiving just because everything is decorated for the holidays already.
Right.
So I really loved that. I was trying to think, why would I have just gone away for Thanksgiving with a friend and not where was the family that year? Why did I decide? Whatever. I have no recollection of why I was not at home. And then another time for work, I was in Australia that week.
Oh.
Because guess what? Thanksgiving isn't celebrated in the rest of the world. But friends of mine, who it's a mixed couple, Australian and American mix, they hosted a big Thanksgiving dinner in Sydney. So the guests were international from all over and a couple of Americans. And that was super fun. It was, you know, it's a little bit harder to procure some of the foods you want in other countries. Julie always had a hard time with this when she lived in Thailand, trying to get like butternut squash and stuff. But Sydney is a great city. Sometimes being in a celebrating a holiday in a place where they're not celebrating that holiday is also kind of fun. So I enjoyed that a lot. So how about you?
I was to give some of our family Thanksgivings. Remember when I first moved to Jackson, Wyoming? I lived there for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the family came out. I had rented like a big log cabin for everyone.
I remember.
Do you remember there was such a snowy, wintry Christmas?
Yes.
And it was just really unexpected. And like my friend and I like went out into the national forest and cut down the Christmas tree and dragged it back to the house and set it up for everybody. And people skied and there was hot cider.
I thought Jackson is so spectacularly beautiful. I just remember being in the kitchen of that. It was a big house. Yeah. So we were cooking all of our meals at home and looking out the window and seeing my first moose.
Yeah. Yeah. you know? That was, I thought, a really fun place to spend the holidays. It was just so super Christmassy, which I like. So that's one that sticks out. Also, Park City, Utah is a very beautiful place. And we spent some good Christmases
at
Park City. So that made a lot of people's lists as well.
One time I spent Christmas in Chiang Rai, Thailand. And it was funny because the Thais, you know, they had all these international visitors in the hotel, but they were trying to celebrate Christmas. But Christmas is not that big a deal in Thailand.
In a Buddhist country.
It's not really their holiday. So I think they associate it just with America, because the whole Christmas dinner and music and costuming was country western, Leanne. So they had a country western band. We all got bandanas.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of a square dancey, country western-y kind of celebration.
Yeah.
And that was close enough to Christmas for them.
Okay.
So it was unexpected. And we really had a good time.
All right. So, Liz, you did some deep analysis of where the Satellite Sisterhood wants to spend their holidays. And you came up with three general areas where people seem to be responding.
Yeah. When people made their comments about why a Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's was particularly memorable, the first is that it was a real adventure. You know, they went someplace that was, you know, unexpected, that they had never been before. Like the year we spent New Year's in the Galapagos.
Right.
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 Like true adventure.
Right.
So the holidays, because people have longer time, it's a good time to knock off one of those big adventure things that might be on your family list. So that was number one. There were a lot of adventures. Number two is just the flipping of the seasons. So if you live in a cold place, if you live in New England, then Christmas in Hawaii is awesome. So there's a lot of like Miami and Maui.
Right.
And, you know, so or but the converse is true, too. If you live in a warm, sunny place like Southern California, then going someplace cold and snowy, you know, you're going to the Canadian Rockies or you're out camping somewhere in a state park.
A lot of people doing that. National
parks.
A lot
of people doing that. Yeah. So the flipping of the seasons seems to add to the fun. And then the last thing I noticed was what I'll just call generational transition. If it's in a year, both Joanne and Judy, and there were a few others too, that remarked that their very memorable Christmas was the year after their parents had died or they lost a parent. And so I think those years where you realize, oh, like, we're the generation that has to step up now when you've lost your parents.
Right.
It becomes important to be together, even more important than it usually is. And it seems like a time where people want to do something special just to kind of stay connected, reconnected to each other. So any kind of generational transition seemed to spark some extra thinking about, let's really do something special this year. So those are my trends, Leanne.
Okay. All right. Here are the places that people mentioned that caught my eye because they're on my list. First, there was a whole thread of Satellite Sisters who had spent Christmas or holidays at the Christmas markets in Europe. So those are places in France, in Germany, Vienna, where they hold these special Christmas markets outside where they sell things and you can eat hot cocoa and there are lights and carolers. Honestly, it sounds so great to me. I've wanted to go to these Christmas markets forever.
Well, you love decorations.
I love decorations. I just think it sounds magical. The key to remember about the Christmas markets is they're actually closed like Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Like you got to go before Christmas because I was actually seriously looking like maybe this year we should go to Munich for Christmas to the Christmas markets. There's so many in that, you know, southern Germany.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no, they're all closed like the 23rd, 24th, 25th.
Oh.
So you have to go ahead of time, but Susan was out there. She said it was amongst her best, magical. Mary Beth seconded that, the Christmas market in Vienna. We had Merlin, the markets in Cologne. She said it was great. Raving about the hot Glühwein, you know, sure.
Hot can't go beverage. Wrong with that.
Great. So that's definitely on my list of something I would love to do. We had a couple people single out just how great England was to spend Christmas.
Uh-huh.
We had some small town believers. We had the London believers. That is another place in my fantasy I was searching. Well, maybe we'll go to London this year. Not going to happen for a bunch of reasons, but I think a Christmas in England also
yes.
sounds great.
Uh-huh.
There's Boxing Day. And then I also know there's like 8 million Premier League matches on the 26th. So
that would be
of interest to my husband and
son. So there's some sporting that can happen.
Yeah. I liked the upended holidays, the flip.
Uh-huh.
Several people mentioned Key West, including my friend Mike, who I went to kindergarten with. So I have never been to Key West, but I do think I romanticize about what it's like. So I think that would be fun to spend a holiday in Key West.
Yeah.
And then the other one that has caught my eye and I've seen in several articles lately is Quebec City.
Oh.
Because
have you ever been there?
Yeah. Remember? Well, we went in eighth grade in French class
oh,
in
yes.
Connecticut. That was our big.
That's true. Because you could drive there.
You could drive.
Yeah.
Because our big like French field trip was Quebec and Montreal. And
that's true.
But that's the last time. But I remember Quebec City being just beautiful and charming and gorgeous and cold. And I've seen several travel articles and then several people on the Satellite Sisters Facebook page mentioned it. So that
uh-huh.
seemed like a good spot.
Okay. Well, here are a few that I picked out. Jocelyn and Allison both mentioned Yosemite.
Mm-hmm.
And just in general, a lot of you are going to national parks over the holidays, which I like. But Yosemite, I have never been to Yosemite. And they say it's just amazing over the holiday season. Now, Jocelyn, I think, rented a cabin. Others of you who posted it, you're at the big fancy Awani.
Right.
That's probably where I would want
right.
to be. Could I get into the Awani?
Yes.
I think so. And that's supposed to be just amazing.
Right.
But you have to make your reservations like on exactly the day they open reservations. Mm-hmm. So I would like to try Yosemite. Chris went to Lake Tahoe nearby. I would like to try that. And Jenny mentioned that her family enjoys the renting of the cabin in state parks. And she said, we get snowed in, we hike, we see bald eagles. She even posted a good photo of her daughter by the fireplace in the cabin that they rented. So,
yeah, cozy cabin. That sounds good.
So all of that is good. I want to give extra points for originality to Julie because they spend Thanksgiving, Leanne, on the Washington State Ferry. So, the ferry goes out from Seattle out to the islands and then turns around and comes back in. They stay on the whole time. You're supposed to normally people take the ferry out and then you get off somewhere.
Yeah.
And, not
this
Julie.
Is a fantastic plan.
Not Julie's family. They pack up their whole Thanksgiving dinner. They take the ferry out. Everybody else gets off. A few people get on, but not that many. And then on the way back, they have their a picnic Thanksgiving dinner on the Washington State Ferry.
Oh, wow. I love that
idea. And if you've
idea.
Ever been there in Puget Sound and that whole area, the mountains and the water, it's just a gorgeous place on earth. So just Thanksgiving dinner on the ferry boat.
Yeah.
Would not have thought of that. A lot of other people mentioned cruises of various kinds.
Right.
Also good. But
because women like to not cook and not clean over the holidays. That feels like a real vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Like you love doing it, but every once in a while, really great not to.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but this is a little bit of extra effort to bring your own picnic Thanksgiving dinner to a ferry boat. But it just sounds super fun. So I wanted to give her points for originality.
There was someone who said they were at Tokyo Disneyland and they just had one of the big turkey legs. And that made me laugh out loud. Something like that. All right. Also, Amy gave a very sweet answer. She said, the best place I've ever spent Thanksgiving was at a neighbor's house. We were strangers, and my husband and I were newly stationed in North Carolina, and he was deploying to the Middle East. She was 19 and trying to make her own turkey, and she ran out of gas for the stove, and her neighbor saw her in the backyard crying. Oh, no, Amy, and said, come on over, and it's been a lifelong friendship.
Really?
It's lasted 30 years. Yeah.
That's how they met?
Yep. She's now 52. They're in their 80s, the neighbors, and they're as close as families. So there you go. That was a great story, Amy. All right. From Vacasa, the rental agency that you can go to, here are the top 10 places people over the last couple of years have actually rented cabins. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are on our list, like Arrowhead, California.
Yeah.
Warren.
I've never been there. Yeah. I got to go there.
Warren, Vermont.
Uh-huh. Oh, I've been there.
San Diego, California. You want the
you
flipper.
Can never go wrong in San Diego.
Breckenridge, Colorado, a
beautiful,
super charming winter spot. New Orleans, Louisiana. Where,
that's where Julie is right now as you are listening to us.
Who doesn't love Maui, Hawaii?
Yeah.
Okay, this one, I don't even know how to pronounce it. Sevierville, Tennessee. Or it's probably pronounced Serverville. It's right there at the base of the Great Smoky Mountains.
Oh, wow.
Liz,
okay.
There you go. Smoky Mountain Christmas for you.
I would not have thought of that. Okay.
Kissimmee, Florida, near Disney.
Yeah.
Lakeside, Montana. That sounds beautiful up there. Mineral, Virginia is supposed to be a tiny, magical, beautiful little place near Fredericksburg. And those are the top 10.
Wow.
Thank you, Vacasa, for providing that list.
I like the fact that people really make an effort to try to make these holidays special. And sometimes that means staying home and sort of bunking in. And other times it means like going out and trying something brand new.
Yeah,
really,
I
really,
like
really
it.
Fun.
I like it. All right. We're the Satellite Sisters. We're going to take a break. We're going to thank our sponsors. And then we'll be back with composer Martin Davich. Stay with us.
Liz, summer is coming up. And you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and
for
chilling
sure.
there
yes.
with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah. I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what I'm recommending. Yeah, either way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox.
We're the Satellite Sisters, and we're back. And it's really always fun to have a guest in the studio, but
it
particularly
is,
when it's your neighbor.
Yeah. That's what holidays are for.
I am so happy to have Marty Davich here. Do you go by Martin professionally?
I go by Martin professionally because it looks better on the screen. But in fact, you call me Marty. It's just fine.
Did you hear that, people? Looks better on the screen. That's because Marty is an Emmy Award-winning composer who scored some of our favorite TV shows like ER,
oh my God.
Southland, which I still mourn the loss of Southland.
Yes.
That was an unbelievable show. Days of Our Lives, which I can't imagine how hard it is to score something that happens 7 days a week. So we're going to talk to you about that. But now you're a teacher and you're here because you have your first album out after 40 years in the business.
This is correct.
Yeah. So did you always want to be a composer? Because that seems like a giant word for someone who, I don't know, plays a little piano.
That's very funny. You know, it hit me the composition bug hit me after the piano bug. I started playing piano very young. Now, I'm kind of a bit of an old guy.
Yeah.
you know, and it's, but I started playing piano when I was about 4 or 5. Uh-huh. I started taking lessons when I was 5. I was not Mozart, but I was born with some talent. So I was drawn to it, and I took to it pretty quickly. Believe it or not, Liberace really impressed me on the piano. I don't know if it was the candlesticks at the side of the piano or his talent. I'm not quite sure. Or the sequin jackets. But it all caught my attention. But I thought he was impressive. I wanted to play as well as he did. And then it was Van Cliburn, which is a little better role model for me.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of composition, it was when I was old enough, and that was in my teens, to really be moved by a piece of music. And mm-hmm. I remember that feeling. And for me, it was a songwriter named Jimmy Webb.
Okay.
Who you guys may remember.
He's written a million hits. I can't name one of them right now.
It's like a name I know, but not songs I know.
Well, MacArthur Park.
Okay.
He blew everybody out of the water with that. It was like a 5-minute thing with this big instrumental. But it was a series of songs that he did that Glenn Campbell sang By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
Wow, that's a good
song. All
these
songs, but every one of them just kind of, we'll get into this conversation about what music, how music impacts the soul.
Yeah.
And every one of them just kind of moved me. And I said, oh my God, I want to do that. And it just kind of became a thing with me. And I started sitting at the piano, and I had been playing piano and studying classical music since I was a child. And I started drifting from my lessons to trying to figure out how to write this stuff and how to make this stuff happen. And so the transition started when I was a teenager.
How do you get into scoring? Because that seems like a really small world.
I wish I could tell you.
Yeah. Some of it's a little bit of luck, a lot of talent.
It was luck.
Right place, right time.
Right. So if you want to know how I got into
yes.
In particularly for me, it was a heck of a lot of luck. Now, I worked a lot as a piano player and as a conductor because of the skill set I had developed over the years. And I was playing for an artist named Anthony Newley, who was a Broadway.
Sure.
I love this guy. He was a wonderful man to work for, a big heart. This
big
Broadway
personality.
Voice.
Yeah.
Wrong. Yeah. Big voice. but we were playing there, and an actress from Days of Our Lives was in the audience and came up to me and said, man, I really could use an accompanist on the show. And I said, I'm sorry, soap operas, I don't think so. She said, but it pays $350 a day. I said, okay. I'm your guy.
I am inspired now.
So I started, and then they said, you know what, we really need a composer for the show. And so I started, that's where I learned. They hired me, this was in like 1980, and we need a sad cue, we need a this cue, we need a that cue. And that in soap operas, you don't write music for every scene, for every show. You write a library, and it's called needle drop.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Back from the days when they would literally drop the needle on
vinyl,
a record.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they did back then. And that was after they used to use it on organ. Somebody would play an organ cue live in the studio. So I learned to write all these things. And, I got a random opportunity to work on Beverly Hills 90210, which happened in 93.
One of the greatest TV shows of all time.
That was the first one, by the way. The first one.
I know. That was a great TV show.
With the great cast.
Yes, my gosh.
Shannon Doherty and all those guys.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a lot of luck. And what I tell my students is, the other thing, when somebody says, here's the Bat Kid, what do you got?
Yeah.
You have to be ready.
Yeah.
And what I was ready.
Ooh, that kind of gives me chills when you say that. Yeah.
I was scared. I was tied up in knots for the first year. I was so scared. But I can tell you, when ER came along, my friend James Newton Howard, who's one of the
top.
He's
a big
as good
man.
As anybody.
Yes.
He's, my favorite composer. but he's been my buddy for years. And he said, Marty, I want you to do the show with me. And then he said, you know, Steven Spielberg's a producer and Michael Crichton's a producer and John Wells, who had just done a bunch of shows. And I said, oh, I don't know if I'm your guy. He said, get off your ass.
I'm That's sorry. Good. You need a friend like that.
And do this. So I did. And then at that time, I wrote this first episode and I walked in to the producers with a cassette tape.
Yeah.
And
great.
And a videotape. And I pushed two buttons and together.
So high tech.
That's how we synced them up at that time. And I demoed the first show, and they liked it, and they hired me. And the first year, I was certain that this episode was my last episode, but it really worked out great. I was working with wonderful people, and it worked out.
Well, that's about the time you moved. I moved into your neighborhood, and you took over a house down the street from us as your studio.
That's true.
I think of that as the music factory. I mean, you literally, like, pumping out music, like, 24/7. People were in and out of there. That was constant work.
That was the time of my life,
yeah,
I got to tell you.
That's cool.
Because it was such a launching pad for me. You
right.
know, I was so lucky for so long. And, you know, so a lot of things came my way because of that show. I was very lucky.
Can I just ask one process thing about how you score a TV show like that? So the beginning of ER, do they give you a finished episode and then you just write music for certain cues that they've asked for? What?
So how does it happen?
Yeah.
How do we do this?
Uh-huh.
First of all, there's a bunch of stuff to talk about if you want to, because the creative process to me mystifies me. But there's the mechanical. There's two aspects. So there's the mechanical aspect of what I do. So when I go to score a show, first of all, I watch the episode first. So I know
who's going to die in
a
horrible death
happens,
on ER.
And I'm looking, and they'll do the show, and the film editor will put a cue. It's called the temp score, a temporary score. They'll put a cue where the director thinks there should be a cue so that we have an idea what they're looking for. And
cue means put music here.
A piece mm-hmm. of music that represents the emotion that they're basically going for.
Got
so
it.
They're kind of laying down, this is what we're looking for, Marty. So, and then I watch it, and then we go and we spot the show. Spotting means you're looking for the spot where the music comes in. So we watch it together, and they'll say, you know, I need more, I need less. And ER was a show where we did not milk the emotion. They let the actors act and the directors direct, and I just supported it.
Uh-huh.
I was never a sappy emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd watch it, and there'll be a conversation, and I'll try to get as much information from the director as I can. But what I'm looking for is, I mean, the words are there, the picture is there, music is trying to provide the emotional context of, I'm looking in the guy's eyes who's talking. I'm trying to see.
Mm-hmm.
I want to provide the humanity in the scene. You know, what's not seen, what's not on the screen, you know. And if you can do that, you complete the story to me, you know. And when it all works right, it's fabulous.
Now, how is it possible that you had never written an album then until now? Like, I mean, that's... You were doing that on a daily basis for
decades.
For decades. Yeah.
And you know what? I was writing so much. It's like Betty Crocker probably doesn't come home and bake a cake.
That's mm-hmm. a good point.
I can see that.
mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, it does. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And there was that. And there was, I'm always at the studio writing. And I'll tell you how this happened. I did a project with a soprano who I accidentally met from Germany a couple years ago, and we did a little concert. And in that concert, she had a wonderful violinist working for her, and I asked if I could just write a little duet for the piano and the violin. I wrote it, we played it in the concert, and my agent came up to me and said, all that stuff with the soprano was great, but I love that little piano piece. And it was music that I don't think that I wrote that I never thought anybody would like. It's like from that little hidden part of me, mm-hmm. it's kind of semi-classical, Eric Satie kind of, who's going to want to listen to this, was always in my mind. And she said, that was the most interesting thing. And write some more stuff like that. Wow. Do an album. And I said, you're crazy. Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I just said it, you know, it was that. And everything I've written for a TV show is for a work for, it's called a work for hire.
Right.
You're paid to do this according to someone else's wishes. You go in there and you put as much of yourself into it as you can, but ultimately it's their work and they're according to their design. I wanted to write something that I wanted to write, and I wanted to have, it's a little bit of a legacy project mm-hmm. for me in a sense. I wanted something of mine hanging around that wasn't on a piece of old tape turning to dust in a vault in the Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
By the way, that's happening.
Oh,
they haven't converted everything. And a lot of shows, and I know for a fact, these things are just kind of,
literally disintegrating.
Turning to dust, yeah.
So was it hard then to write an album, like, so from scratch? After years of working in a different way, or were you just ready?
I was so ready.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's an interesting thing, because it's different, because when I'm working to film, all my inspiration is right there. You know, it feeds me. This is, it's emotional work, but it's really, it's based on a musical phrase. So I'll go in, I work very intuitively. My first process on anything I do musically is without thought, without too much thought. If I worked a film.
That's right. The way we do this.
Yeah.
how's it worked out?
So far, so good. 20 years.
We have some misses, but you know.
I like the creative first and the analytical second.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I get in my own way and I don't come up with the goods.
Right.
And so that's kind of just the way I have to work. It's the way I've always worked. I know people for whom those things are much more tightly woven, and they get things done much more quickly. For me, that's not the way it is. But I just enjoy allowing the ideas to come. And I'll sit down, and I'll push record, and I'll go. And somewhere between the beginning and the end, there's a little gem that comes up, and that'll inform the rest of what I need. So,
music is just such magic to me.
Right.
I think because I can't imagine doing it myself. You know, I don't have little phrases of music in my head. I think if I tried to do something intuitively, it's not really my language, Marty, you know, like I can
produce like the national anthem or something.
Yes, right.
You know what I mean? You couldn't get that.
Yeah, it would have to be about something and I could have some information I was trying to communicate.
Yeah, are you you're a writer?
Well, I mean, I'm a marketer, and in the context of all the marketing work, I've written a lot. We write some of our material for this. I'm more of a speaker and a organizer of thoughts than I am an organizer of, let's just say, feelings.
Feelings.
Maybe that's what I don't do so much. Feelings. And music has to just be so felt.
I just think it comes out in different ways. I could not paint my way out of a paper bag.
Yeah.
And I've tried to paint my way out of a paper bag. But I mean, seriously, I once got an easel and some paints and I said, let's go. And nothing. Nothing.
That's fascinating.
And there are people, you know, it's just
who are intuitive that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's fascinating. But for me, it's so much just about communicating feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you called the album The Conversation,
yes.
Which is a good one for Satellite Sisters. Mm-hmm. Liz, you always like to cite our motto, but go for it. Say it
Not
again.
Every conversation will change your life, but any conversation can, Marty. So we believe in conversation.
And so why did that title speak to you?
The piece for which that was titled is just, I like conversations, first of all, like you guys.
Uh-huh.
I like the give and take. You're not, you know, something's going to come of that, whether, and not necessarily what you intended at all, but something is going to come of the friction and the release of any conversation. Mm-hmm. But in particular, this piece just had, it started off with, basically it sounded like a conversation when I got through writing it, because it was the way it was a musical. I'm not saying anything yet.
Can you hum it?
It was a bunch of musical phrases that were just talking to each other throughout the thing. And I said, well, this is a conversation. And as it went along, it resolved and there was more tension and it resolved. And then it was a lovely conversation.
Okay.
So I call it The Conversation. And I like that title for the album as well. It was interesting enough to deserve a place on the front of the album.
Did you have fun doing this?
I had a great time.
Okay.
Doing this.
Sometimes it can be stressful when, like, oh yeah, you should write this thing.
It was absolutely indulgent, and just what I needed to do. And then, when I finished the album, I hired an orchestra and I did it. I did a performance of the whole thing as well.
Oh, you did!
That must have been thrilling.
And that was thrilling to get on stage with the string section and the brass section and everybody behind me. Was really great. And
I feel like that's what I need for my next book tour, is an orchestra behind me.
Okay, that's an excellent idea.
It would make your entrance much more significant.
So you can find The Conversation, Martin Davich, at any digital platform.
Correct.
You can find it anywhere. And you're actually putting together a Satellite Sisters Holiday Conversation playlist for us that people can find at Spotify with some of the cuts from your album and then other holiday songs that you think work well with your stuff.
That's correct. Just music that I think will be enjoyable and hopefully good for your heart at this time of year.
Yeah.
Good for your heart. That's nice. We all need that.
We absolutely need that. What are you and your family doing for the holidays?
You know, for the first time, we're staying put.
Oh, wow.
And I know. Figure that. Go figure. And it's so nice. Traveling during the holidays can be a bit stressful.
Mm-hmm.
I can vouch for that. We're staying home and just enjoying each other without all the hubbub. And we always travel, and we're not traveling.
So okay.
We're home for the holidays.
That sounds nice.
Well, I know your son is a musician. Do the other kids play? Like, do you, after dinner, is it the Marty and Jacob hour?
It's the Marty and Jacob show after dinner for sure.
Oh, that's cool.
That sounds fun.
Oh, we did it for years. We had a place in Telluride, Colorado.
Right.
We used to go up.
Is that your phone, Marty?
That's not happening.
I think it's Spielberg.
We finally, shame on me. We finally sold the house, so we're not up in Telluride anymore.
Okay.
But we would always get together and start with Christmas carols, but then it would just go crazy to whatever anybody felt like singing or doing. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that sounds fun. Again, we have no musical talent in our family.
No skills.
Yeah.
But our next generation does.
Yes.
We have a lot of,
singer-songwriters. That's
millennials
good.
Who are very expressive musically.
Yeah.
So,
it makes for a lot of fun.
So thank goodness.
So who do you like to listen to? Who's the perennial favorite? Who has to be played at Christmas time?
I love that Wynton Marsalis Christmas album. Oh my gosh, that's a beautiful album. And then I think that's it. That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the Luciano Pavarotti, Oh Holy Night. That's a good one. That's a winner.
And then you got to go with the boss. Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
There's some old 50s stuff that's great.
I enjoy. And then I like that Joni Mitchell song, The River has become a Christmas song.
I was just listening to that this weekend, as a matter of fact, as I was walking my dog, listening to that whole album.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell. Amazing.
She is amazing.
Still amazing.
She's amazing.
So I'm really looking forward to the Satellite Sisters Holiday Conversation playlist on Spotify.
You can find it. Sure.
Yes.
Great.
That'll be great.
Marty, thank you so much for coming in. We enjoyed this conversation about The Conversation. Best of luck on the album. It's exciting. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Very inspirational. We all have things we want to express. So how wonderful that you have found a way to express your own things.
Thanks.
That was fantastic to hear about that process.
I know. It's just amazing to me. I love to hear people talk about what form their own creativity takes. Because we all have something. You know, we've been talking about this a lot lately on the show. Like, we all have some creative impulse, and we just express it in different ways. But to build your whole career on doing the kind of very specialized work in music that he did. It's amazing.
Right. And he was the hardest working man in Hollywood. I mean, mm-hmm. I know because the studio was right down the street. We'd see him working day and night. So mm-hmm. I know he said he had a lot of good luck, but like, you know, as our mother always used to say, you make your own good luck.
Yes.
Like he earned a lot of that. So that was fun to see.
I'm going to go watch some more. Go back to ER. It's right. On Hulu. FYI.
Oh.
Yeah. If you want, so if you want to go back and watch that first episode, the premiere of ER, to hear like his first try at that, that would be kind of interesting.
Right. It would be great,
totally
actually,
that.
Now that you understand he was really trying to underplay the music.
Yeah.
Support
the drama.
Right. Right. Yeah.
The humanity. He brings the humanity.
I know.
He's
a real nice guy, too. All right.
Yeah.
A lot of humanity there. We are going to actually close the show if you want to hear a cut off Marty's album, Paris Stroll. That's going to be the music playing under us as we say goodbye. And then look for that list on Spotify, the Satellite Sisters Holiday Conversation. Mm-hmm. It'll be some of Marty's songs and then some of the other holiday faves that he loves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. Liz, we want to thank our sponsors for this week's Satellite Sisters. We always want to thank Sergio Enriquez for making us sound great. Special thanks to the team at Wondery. Listen, happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yeah, enjoy.
Safe travels. Enjoy. Good luck with your turkey. Don't burn your house down if you're frying.
Be kind to yourself and your family.
Right. Think about other things to talk about other than grim things. You could talk about this fascinating interview you just heard with a composer who scored ER. There
yes.
you go.
And then the whole family can gather around the TV and watch the first 10 seasons.
All right. We're the Satellite Sisters. Don't forget, call your Satellite Sisters. Thank you.